Good Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
FDOT, nonetheless, wants to design the bridge to allow for pedestrian and cycling access. So that would still be protected. But the problem is, we lost, because of the passage of time, we lost the grant brick by brick for moving the Fisher Hamilton building to keep that history. And so the only way to expand that bridge according to standards would be to remove the Fisher Hamilton building. So that's one issue.
All right. So if you're not familiar with the city of Milton transportation issues, that's the voice of Mayor Heather Lindsay. And by the way, I apologize. The meeting recap for today's episodes of Days of Our Milton is actually from a couple of weeks ago. There's been a meeting even since then that I will, trust me, get to because it was worth it. But I feel like I haven't told these stories yet, and they need to be told, especially because as a resident of the city of Milton, John, can you confirm that getting the bridge across the river, Highway 90 bridge, expanded from two lanes to four lanes and bikes and pedestrians is an important thing to be done?
Oh, it's more than important.
And has been for decades.
Essential.
It's a crisis right now. It's a real problem. Not just for transportation issues, for people being late and not knowing how long it's going to take to get anywhere, which is a huge problem, but also for first responders, ambulances, and so forth, getting across that bridge and life safety matters. It's a big, big, big problem. Okay. So trying to figure this out for years, the council was bickering over whether they were going to be in favor of the expansion or not in favor of the expansion. The worry is that if you make the road wider, more cars travel it, that makes downtown less safe, destroys those businesses because people driving fast past a place don't stop. Also, if the speed limit goes up because the road quality goes up, then all of a sudden you have more pedestrian danger and so forth. So there was a long time bickering about that. That's all sort of fallen by the wayside now, except that the plans to widen it, they were hoping to save this historic Fisher Hamilton building right there on the corner, and the widening will not allow that. If you widen the road, you're going to have to move that building. Well, they had a plan to move the building, but they lost the funding to move that building.
But another issue is there's really no money programmed for these improvements, regardless of what they look like, for at least 5 years. And at this point, they don't even have funding available for purchase of right-of-way, much less building a bridge.
So they had the grant to move, or they had the money to move the building. They lost the money to move the building. The building is still there. The building is in the way of the expansion of the road. But at the same time, FDOT doesn't have the design past 30%. That design at 30% requires the building to go away. The charrettes, or the meetings that the citizens have had, say that they want to keep the building. And so FDOT's like, we all better figure this out before we spend any more money trying to acquire right away, which we don't even have money for. Like, this whole thing is at a standstill. In other words, the entirety of the issue or the project is metaphorically in the same situation as that bridge is every day in the morning and the afternoon, which is screwed up and unsolvable. So
the people who have been frustrated with the public safety concerns that are created by the lack of a four-lane bridge or some additional lane that would allow an ambulance to pass through traffic stuck on a bridge, that public safety concern cannot be addressed for years and years at this point.
And that's the problem. You can't make it better because literally, if you look at it, if you've ever driven there, the bridge runs right between the Fisher Hamilton building on the south side and what is it? I think it's for rent, or maybe it's a medical marijuana building. Anyway, the north side, nobody cares about that one. But like, you can't widen the bridge without destroying the building or moving the building. It's a problem if you're going to actually solve it. And she says, yeah, there's no way to solve it. We can't, but maybe.
Only way I see us getting the improvements needed to Highway 90 is to ask the TPO to support FDOT designating that corridor as part of the strategic intermodal system. That particular designation would prioritize that area for funding. Right now, that area is called non-strategic intermodal system roadway, which means it is not prioritized.
Okay. The idea here is that you have the sort of the standard projects and then the special projects. And I mean, I don't know if there's a better way to describe it than that. Maybe somebody else would come up with one, but that's the way I think of it. Standard projects, the Transportation Planning Organization, TPO, which is 19 members. It's all the city council. Well, I think it's five, not all seven of the city council members in Pensacola. It's the mayor of Milton. It's one designate from, I think, the mayor of Gulf Breeze. It's all five Santa Rosa commissioners, all five Escambia commissioners, Baldwin County. I don't remember if it's all five or just one. Anyway, there's a disproportionate weight for Escambia County on the TPO. And so moving a project for Milton where they have one representative for Milton plus the commissioners against the Escambia Commission, getting it up on the TPO list for standard priorities is not very easy, as Mayor Heather Lindsay points out.
The TPO is made up of members of both county commissioners, both counties, all five commissioners, members of the Pensacola City Council, one representative from Milton, one representative from Gulf Breeze, and one representative from Alabama.
That's correct.
So we are always outnumbered by the Escambia folks. So if there is a project that benefits another area besides ours, we are going to be outvoted as far as moving our projects up on the non-strategic list. So my request to you is to consider a strategic approach that would support the military mission by escalating in importance that particular corridor. And that would also allow us a chance to get funding faster, to meet the feedback we've received from the community for over 10 years.
So getting it on the list, the TPO, getting it moved up the priority list on the TPO to where it's actually going to have action taken, not going to happen, or at least not easy to happen. So instead, let's try to designate it as a strategic intermodal system. Let's say it's important in other ways, and one of the other ways would be connecting people with Whiting Field. If we can say that this is a key thoroughfare to get to Whiting Field, kind of a convoluted way, but 87 to 90 and then, you know, up. I mean, it makes sense. She says maybe there's a way to bypass the roadblock of the TPO and get it taken care of. The problem still isn't solved, though, because you have the issue of, not only can you get the votes, but also you have the conflict over what the design is going to be. You have the citizens want to keep the Fisher Hamilton building. It doesn't look likely, but FDOT isn't going to proceed with design until they get agreement from the citizens about what they want to do. There's still questions about speed, and are you going to have one bridge or two bridges, a second bridge for the pedestrians and the bicycles? Where will that bridge go? These are kind of all questions, okay? But the status of that road and that bridge is a problem.
It's also important to note, and you'll see this in the resolution, that according to all standards, Highway 90 is failing as a roadway. So it doesn't actually provide the level of service required, and it is a United States highway. So we can't control its outcome.
Yeah, the problem with state and or federal highways is you can't fix them even if they're messed up and there's all kinds of parameters. All right, and just again to reiterate, okay, this is Heather Lindsay trying to do her best, although it is the night before the TPO meeting and she's going to go bring it to them. And there's a little bit of a controversy over why did you wait so long? Why are we being given this at the last minute? I'm not going to get into all that. It doesn't matter that much. The main takeaway here is Milton has for years trying to expand that bridge because Highway 90 needs to be at least four lanes. John, confirm?
I can confirm that.
And we have bikes and pedestrians want to cross the river, which is, you know, dicey. And if you're going to widen the bridge to four lanes, you're not going to have any room for bikes and pedestrians. All of this is expensive. Moving the Fisher Hamilton building or just destroying it, which people don't want to do, are your basic parameters. Okay, so that was kind of the first meeting. That was the, like, discussion section. Then in the actual meeting, because they always have a work session and then an actual meeting. In the actual meeting, Heather Lindsay was kind of reiterating again the importance of this.
The problem is the design is at 30%, and that 30% design reflects a bridge that goes right through Fisher Hamilton building, which is obviously not what the Charette results recommended. So we're at a pause of what do we do with the Fisher Hamilton building? The design will not be completed until we give feedback about that.
So right now it's stuck until we give better feedback that FDOT is willing to fund because we've given them an actual solution, which they don't have yet. They have a bunch of disagreements, okay?
That's probably why the design is not completed, is because they don't want to complete a design that doesn't respect your charrette results until they know more from you about what you'd like to do. The problem is we don't have the grant anymore to move the Fisher Hamilton building. So that's why the charrette results did not include moving the Fisher Hamilton building, because we don't have the money to do it.
So if nothing happens at this point, then nothing will happen. And it'll be 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years, and you'll still have, and John is just shaking his head in disgust.
Yes, for sure.
How bad this is, right?
People don't understand how bad it really, really is.
Yeah, it's, I mean, okay, to give you comparisons, think about like Pine Forest during rush hour and the years of trying to get that widened. Or think about, I don't know, Palafox. You know, at rush hour, like, you know, north of Brent. You have these problems around, you know, and look, I mean, you know, previously you'd have Highway 98. I mean, there's all kinds of roads that need to be widened. It's just that this one's been this way a long time, and it really, really needs it because massive growth on the west side of the river and massive growth on the east side of the river.
Right.
And interconnectivity between
those. With all the industrial stuff coming up. I mean, the traffic is horrendous.
And trying to build like a wastewater treatment plant to handle the new growth on the east side of the road. Like, it's, I mean, really, this is a huge problem. So Tom Power is one of the newer members of the board, and I think he says exactly the right thing.
We come up with a lot of really good ideas. 10-foot lanes to keep the traffic down, speed tables, design attributes that make it a really nice city park atmosphere walking through there, driving through there.
Everything except the speed tables, sir. And by the way, 10-foot lanes are very narrow. But the idea there is he's worried about traffic calming and not having people zipping through downtown at a high rate of speed. That's what he's worried about. Don't put speed tables on Highway 90. 10-foot lanes is, you know, we can wrangle about that. I think that's too narrow, but okay.
Let's don't get hung up on the bridge and throw the baby out with the bathwater because we want to save this building. I'd like to see the building saved too, but if we can't, I'd rather have the bridge in the four lane.
That's it.
That's just my opinion, and I think we need to go forward with the SIS, in my opinion, because that's going to get it brought forward. Back.
Rather have the bridge than save the building if push comes to shove, and push has long since come to shove. That's the problem. but he agrees with designating or trying to get it designated as Strategic Intermodal System, or SIS.
I've been told that to do the pedestrian and cycling bridge is not going to be affordable. They do not anticipate being able to accommodate that part of your charrette results. So that's a separate discussion, y'all. It has nothing to do with whether you approve this resolution.
So that's going to be interesting because FDOT is on this huge push to have interconnectivity for, you know, other modes of transportation, like bicyclists, walking, scooters, whatever. And if you think about, I mean, think about like downtown Pensacola, where you have some of these north-south streets that are, you know, we've road dieted them down, but that's in order to create bike lanes. This is the other direction. We're widening in order to create car lanes, but eliminate the ability to, you know, walk in these areas, so, or bike in these areas. So as I understand it currently, you just literally will not have the ability to bike or walk across that bridge unless they do I don't know what the answer is. Second bridge, big expense, because bridges are very expensive, big expensive bridge that allows for four lanes of traffic plus bikes. And, you know, like there's no answer to this question. So you would really have like the west coast of the Blackwater River bikes and the east coast No, we don't want to have that East Coast, West Coast nonsense. But that's one of the problems you'll have because there's no other real way across this. So to be determined later, but in any case, she was going to go to the TPO and ask. I did not watch this TPO meeting. I got home late and they're not good at posting their stuff online. So I don't assume that it got confirmed. But anyway, there's another meeting coming. Coming up next hour. This was more just.
Oh boy!
Oh no! This is,
you laid the groundwork, right?
This is not the drama topic. This is going on. This is information that people need to know. The real drama is going to come up in connection with the whole banking scandal conflict in Milton. You basically had Truist Bank told Milton that they didn't want to let them do an investment account to get better investments for bonds. Because there's too much political turmoil in Milton. What on earth are you talking about?
I have no idea, Andrew McKay.
And I didn't cause it. I just report on it. And there was also the question of whether to allow miniature goats in the city of Milton, which was a very entertaining conversation. So, yes, coming up later on in this show at 6:10 and 7:10, we'll be updating you on the bank fight and the baby goat fight, the hiring of the city attorney, which turned out not to be a fight, the ongoing lawsuit or not against lawyer Heather Lindsay. Anyway, we'll get to all that later. You know, there's time for more episodes later on in the day, so stick around. Everything's going to be fine. Mostly, if you don't live in Milton. So 524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could be lower testosterone.
Lower T?
Yeah, I went through it a while back. Once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone. I got Nugenix Total T, and it's made a huge difference for me.
I've seen that ad on TV. Is it for real?
Oh, yeah. The key ingredient is something called Tesnor, which helps boost free and total testosterone levels to help you trim up and stay lean.
And it's made a difference for you?
Man, I feel like I'm in my 20s again. At work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
Are they still giving out complimentary bottles for people to try it for themselves?
Yeah, you just need to send them a text.
Text EQUAL to 321-321 right now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text EQUAL to 321-321. That's EQUAL to 321-321.
Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 when Brittany Hughes from Parks and Recreation will be on the show. She'll be discussing summer camps, where they're located, the cost, and how you can apply for a scholarship for your child to attend. She'll also cover deadlines to register, how to register, and will be available for you to call or text in with your questions during the show.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, happens Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. You're invited to bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This Tuesday, it's a brother and sister country music duo and Pensacola's very own Pearl and Rafe. Pearl brings the glitter, Rafe brings the grit, and together they bring the party wherever they go. It's Bands on the Beach this Tuesday night at 7 with Pearl and Rafe. Just remember, no pets or glass allowed.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before pep talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
What does a yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Yellow light mean? Slow down.
Oh man, Christopher Lloyd, what a gem. 527 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
And thank you very much. Good morning. President Trump considering taking money from Harvard to give it to trade schools. He made a post on Truth Social yesterday. Trump said, quote, "I am considering taking $3 billion of grant money away from a very anti-Semitic Harvard and giving it to trade schools across our land."
So $3 billion appropriated by Congress for research into scientific questions that was then granted to Harvard. He's going to take away on his own authority and reallocate it to unspecified trade schools that don't do research.
That's about the long and short of it, yeah.
Okay, let me imagine what could happen. Harvard will file a lawsuit again, and they will win again. And this will all just be bluster on Truth Social. Go ahead, David, go ahead.
All right, continuing on. Have you seen this boat explosion?
I haven't seen, no.
Well, there's not video. I guess I phrased that wrong. But there was a boat explosion in Florida. 11 people hurt yesterday. Now, this happened as a boat was anchored in a sandbar by the Fort Lauderdale Yacht Club, apparently. There were 13 people on board when the explosion happened. I believe 10 of them were adults, two of them were kids or something. And I believe everybody survived, but they were taken to burn units in Miami.
Wow. Dude, I mean, why would a boat explode?
I believe it was a fuel issue.
I mean, I would guess. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So far they haven't come out and said officially the cause on that. Three more of the escaped New Orleans inmates back in custody now. Eight of the 10 inmates have been recaptured since they went on the lam out of the New Orleans Justice Center on May 16th. Several people have also been arrested for helping those escapees.
Yeah, so we're now down to two still outstanding.
Two still on the lam. I'm just trying to get as many All times right, in as I can. Two on the lam, see?
Thanks for that update, see? All right, David. 529 on News Radio 92.3. Governor DeSantis got booed at the WWE event. Did you see this?
No.
Yeah, he got...
It wasn't here, I could tell you that.
Yeah, no, it was so weird. Like, the reporting on this, and I watched a video. It wasn't all that dramatic in the sense that I'd, like, want to play it for you on the radio. But apparently, you know, Governor DeSantis just, you know... It's just not the response you're ever looking for. With a mild chant of, you suck!
Well, I mean, that is a wrestler's chant.
Yeah, this is in Tampa, so, okay. No other particular indicate, like, why, what for, you know, who, you know, I'm pretty sure that in Tampa it had nothing to do with, for example, the UWF issue or any of that. But there you go, just a, you know, minor unwelcomeness, so to speak, at a wrestling event.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. President Trump is eyeing sanctions against Russia this week, according to a report from the Wall Street Journal.
This comes as President Trump grows increasingly frustrated with Russia, expressing doubts that President Putin wants to end the war. On Capitol Hill, pressure is growing for President Trump to take tougher action against Russia, especially after it launched its largest drone and missile attack against Ukraine over the weekend.
As Fox's Madeline Rivera, the president accused Putin of going absolutely crazy, the Kremlin attributing Trump's remarks to emotional overload. British police holding a 53-year-old man accused of driving into a crowd of pedestrians that were celebrating Liverpool's Premier League victory at a parade Monday.
We believe this to be an isolated incident. The incident is not being treated as terrorism.
That's Jenny Sims with the local police. At least 47 people were injured. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. It is 79 degrees and cloudy right now in Pensacola. A big change could be coming today to the University of West Florida. The Board of Trustees is meeting to accept the resignation of President Dr. Martha Saunders and name an interim president.
It's very public that our Commissioner of Education, Manny Diaz, is the prime candidate to be the interim president here at the University of West Florida.
And that is former UWF president Dr. Judith Benz, who says she believes Diaz will get the interim job and eventually also be named as the permanent president. She tells Channel 3 that she thinks there will be big changes coming up at the university. 11 people have died, or 11 people are hurt, rather, after a boat explosion in Broward County. That happened late yesterday in Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale Fire Rescue says the boat exploded while anchored on a sandbar in the intracoastal waterway. There were 13 people on board, 9 adults, 2 kids were thrown overboard, 10 of them taken to a burn unit in a hospital in Miami. 8 of the adults are said to be in good condition, 2 kids in fair condition. There's no word on what caused the explosion. One victim says he thinks it was a fuel leak. Ashley Moody back from what she's calling a great honor. Senator Moody was in New York over the weekend to attend the graduation ceremony for the United States Military Academy at West Point. President Trump gave the commencement address. Moody wrote on X, she is incredibly proud of the nation's newest officers, and they'll serve America with courage and love as they join the long gray line. Well, those who made the ultimate sacrifice represent patriotism in its purest form. That yesterday from Governor Ron DeSantis. That's what he wrote on X about Memorial Day. He says it's up to us to secure our liberty by producing leaders who are willing to make great sacrifices on behalf of others. The governor adds, quote, God bless the memory of those who gave the last full measure of devotion in service to the United States of America. Well, a shooting in Fairhope left one person injured over the weekend. Police say they're investigating the incident in the Rock Creek neighborhood. Happened on Saturday night. One person was taken to the hospital after the shooting, which is described as a tragic firearm discharge accident on a GoFundMe that was set up for the victim the following day. Fairhope police say the investigation into that incident and interviews are currently ongoing. 534 News Radio. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We do have a chance of rain today. 40% chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm. High near 85 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 72. For Wednesday, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. High near 84. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 73. Keeping a 40% chance of rain on that Thursday with a high near 80 degrees. Stay connected. Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, it is 79 degrees. We've got cloudy skies in Pensacola, also 79 in Gulf Breeze, and just a touch cooler. It's 75 being reported in Milton. Your next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, and dependable.
I'm Frank Miller with Your Money Now. The stock futures seeing a bit of a bump this morning following President Trump's announcement over this past weekend that he would be delaying tariffs to the European Union. Trump says he was looking to extend the deadline to July 9th before considering imposing a 50% tariff. A number of economic reports are expected out this week. Investors will be keying in on the latest data on consumer confidence. That's set for release a little later this morning. Meanwhile, the release of the minutes from the Federal Reserve's May meeting is set for release this week, along with weekly jobless claims, revision on GDP numbers, and pending home sales reports. That's due on Thursday. And on Friday, reports on personal income and spending and consumer sentiment are due out. And a new study is ranking Utah as having the worst nurse shortage in the country. According to a study released from the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, Utah was followed on the list by Washington, Georgia, Wyoming, and the state of Maryland. And that is Your Money Now.
Hey, Northwest Florida, Dave Ramsey here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gulf Coast Air Care. Owner Todd St. Ors and his team focus on the indoor air quality side of HVAC for the people who want comfortable, healthy, and energy-efficient homes and workplaces. Gulf Coast Air Care can help you with dusty, moldy, or leaky duct systems, hot or cold rooms, and odors and humidity issues. So, if you need duct cleaning, duct repairs, or air filtration, you should call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768. They've been trusted members of the community for over 30 years. And remember what Todd always says, if you don't have a good air filter, you are one. Call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768 or visit them online at gulfcoastaircare.com. And be sure and tell them that Dave Ramsey sent you.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us on Friday at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
Like this before, but now I'm feeling it even
Good morning, 7:39, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and this, I think this is going to be a real treat. On the line, I've got Anna Eskamani. She is one of the most prominent liberal Democrats in the Florida House. She is from Orlando, the 42nd District, and I want to give you just a real brief bio on her before we bring her on, because I think, you know, you'll find this interesting. When I say she's a liberal's liberal, I mean that. She's a University of Central Florida, UCF, BA in Political Science and International Studies, a BA in Interdisciplinary Studies and Women's Studies, UCF Master's in Public Administration and Nonprofit Management, Graduate Certificate in Gender Studies, Certified Nonprofit Professional, also UCF PhD in Public Affairs. Her recreational interests she lists as feminist research, going to the beach, poetry, and running. She's part of the Energy and Climate Caucus. She's part of the UCF Women and Gender Studies Advisory Council, part of the Orlando Gay Chorus Board, and you get the point. So when I say a liberal is liberal, she is. But I have been a fan for years. When I listen to the debates, when I listen to the discussions, what I hear in Anna is somebody who is smart, she's informed, she's willing to have a conversation. I may disagree with her 93% of the time, but this is the kind of person I want to have in a conversation. And I just thought it'd be interesting to talk to her. Dr. Anna Eskamani and State Representative, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. What a treat.
No doubt. So let's just start with the real basic thing. As a Democrat in the House, you're in the massive minority. You barely have a quarter of the House. You guys never get your bills passed. You rarely get your bills heard. You're basically there as the voice of the opposition, and that's about all the power you usually have. What motivates you? What keeps you in the fight? Why do you bother?
That's such a great question. And what I think about every day. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, just like the representatives that are honored and lucky to serve the Pensacola area, my constituents elected me in a competitive election. In fact, my very first election was my toughest one because I actually flipped my seat from a Republican seat to a Democratic seat. And I did that winning the support of not just, of course, Democratic voters, but also no party affiliation voters, and even a few conservatives who liked the message that I lead with. And so it's important that those constituents that I have the honor of serving have a voice in the process, even if, to your point, it's not a voice that's going to be as loud, if you will, in setting the agenda compared to my peers. But with that said, there's also a lot of opportunities for common ground and compromise. And if you are a Democrat in a Florida House, you have to learn the art of persuasion. You also have to believe in the power of evolution, where people and their viewpoints can change if you are persuasive. And so I really take that as a challenge. And I also do see the Florida House as a people's house. And the people's house is going to be a little rowdy. It's going to be some conflict here and there. But at the end of the day, it's a reflection of how diverse this state is. And I can't think of a more effective place to be if you care about community. Because some of the everyday problems, whether it's housing affordability, transportation, public safety, do not have a party affiliation. So we can find those opportunities of common ground. But part of my job, to your point, is being that loyal opposition. And I think it's important that Floridians who agree with me also have that voice.
No, it's a really interesting question to me because I notice it in my party. Okay, I'm a Republican. You know, I'm a conservative. And I see my three-quarters or two-thirds majority sometimes do really stupid things because they happen to have the power and the ability to do it. And, you know, when you're a tight majority, or if it's close, you have to reach across the aisle, you have to make compromise, you have to persuade, you have to reason. When you have a supermajority, it's bad. It's like a monopoly in business. You know, no competition means you wind up charging more for the worst product. And,
I
that's what I sometimes see with the legislature is, they do dumb stuff just because they can, and nobody has the power to stop them, which that's not a good thing.
Well, and I really appreciate your metaphor to a monopoly structure, because I definitely agree. I mean, I have very free market principles when it comes to the need for competition and for the role that government can play in eliminating monopolies. But it's just so ironic because we literally are operating in that structure. And so I agree with you wholeheartedly. And so we need to be there to try to bring that balance. Now, of course, this legislative session has been very unique, more unique than others, because the Speaker of the House, my Speaker, is challenging Governor Ron DeSantis in ways that we haven't seen before, at least in my tenure in the legislature. And that has restored some balance, which I'm grateful for, honestly, because people, unfortunately, get comfortable, they get power hungry, they just keep gripping onto control, and good ideas never rise to the top. Because I'm a firm believer that if you have a policy proposal and it's good, it shouldn't matter where it came from, whether a Republican proposed or a Democrat proposed it. And honestly, as a Democrat, I've had to let go of a lot of good ideas. You know, there are bills that I have filed that I knew because I had filed it, it wasn't going to pass. For example, Florida has in the last 6 years, we've created a online tracking system for rape kits. So if you are a survivor of sexual assault, not only are you going to be navigating this trauma and hopefully you feel comfortable reporting it to law enforcement and you, if you consent to a rape kit, Florida now allows you to track where that kit is, have there been any matches made, and for you to be more in control of your future and of the charges you may wish to seek. That was a bill that I filed when I was a freshman lawmaker, and I had to give it up to another Republican lawmaker because I knew it wasn't going to pass, at least in the beginning of my career. Now I can pass bills because as a senior, you have a little bit more respect, if you will, in the process.
Sure.
But when you're first starting as a Democrat, it's even harder.
And the Republicans are not going to give you a win that you can go back and campaign on. I mean, you know, that's power politics. That's how that works.
Exactly. 100%. I mean, case in point, the diaper tax break. So this was a bill that I carried for 5 years to eliminate the tax on children's diapers and adult incontinence products. And we got it through. And to my speaker's credit, this was Speaker Paul Renner. He did give me a shout out on the House floor, said it was my diaper tax language. But of course, when Governor Ron DeSantis campaigned on it and signed it into law, I was not at the ribbon cutting for it. You know, I wasn't. I was never mentioned in his hundreds of ads about it, right? I know. Now, granted, honestly, you know, my feelings are not hurt. Like you said, politics is politics. And everyone in my district knows it was my bill. And that's what matters to me is the folks who vote for me need to know the work that I'm doing. But at the end of the day, you can't have ego in this process. So if there's one lesson I've learned the last 7 years of being the Florida House is you can't have ego. And I think it makes the process a lot easier, honestly, when you are a Democrat in the back rows, when you don't take things personally, you don't have ego, because then you just focus on the fight ahead. And you're not caught up in your head, right? And so that's been very helpful for me.
No, that's interesting. And it dovetails with what you were early saying about how, you know, you can't afford to just be right. You have to learn how to be persuasive, which is a whole different set of skills, especially when you're trying to persuade the other side, basically, to give you a win. Anna, I'm a conservative, you know, I'm a Republican, I'm a Christian, okay? But I find more and more that the people that I feel like I have common cause with, you know, like my tribe, if you want to call it that, is not necessarily those people. It's people who care about reasoning. It's people who care about evidence. It's people who are willing to be wrong. It's people who are willing to learn. And that's one of the things that drew me to you. And there are other, like, I'm a big fan of Jason Pizzo, you know, who just left the Democratic Party. I like him because it feels There's a team of people that are playing with civility and rules and reasoning and logic and a willingness to be in error. And then there's sort of the flamethrowers on either side. And honestly, I can get along better with people who are disagreeing with me politically but play those games right rather than the sort of flamethrowers on my side who say stupid stuff. Do you feel that way?
Oh, for sure. And what's so ironic about that, and this is something I talk about a lot, actually, is, you know, a lot of folks might assume that because I'm a Democrat and because I'm a Democrat, right, that, like, a lot of Republicans don't like me, don't want to talk to me. And not only is that not true, but the people that a lot of us don't want to talk to are the same people, regardless of party, and it's because they're just difficult to talk to, right? To your point, they're just not nice people. They're very bombastic. And they're difficult to work with. And I think just in any work environment, you know, my work environment in this context is 119 coworkers. We've all been elected from different parts of the state to uphold the values that we were elected upon, right? So if you're at a, you know, your day job and you got 20 coworkers, there might be a coworker regardless of their political affiliation, they're just hard to work with. It's the same thing, right? It's just regardless of their political affiliation, personality-wise, they're very difficult. And they do have ego, or they have their own agenda. And you know, politics can be very transactional, and there are some folks who also, that's how they operate. You know, they operate in this context of, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Honestly, that's not how I like to operate. I believe in transformational politics, which for me means I give without expectation, with the hope that it will inspire you to do the same, but I don't have a agenda of you returning the favor. And I like to think that when you model that, it can really set a catalyst for a new type of politics. Because as you might know, I am someone who challenges corporate greed. I'm pretty aggressive on that. I don't take money from large corporations. I don't even take money from the theme parks in my own backyard, because I like to operate a campaign free of that type of influence. And it also allows me to make decisions based on merit, not based on influence, you know, of a certain actor or entity.
Right.
And I would argue that that's a better politics, right? It doesn't matter my party. That's just a better politics that I think constituents appreciate. And I don't know if you know this, Andrew, but my district, I actually won two precincts that voted for Trump last year. So there are Trumpist commodity voters in Orlando.
My brain just split in half. That's amazing.
I've met a few of them.
No, that's
I know, and I've met a few of them, and you know, a part of it is just authenticity, it's the accessibility, but it's also the fact that they know what they get with me, and I think there's a layer of trust there that even if we don't always agree, they know where I'm coming from, and it's a good place.
No, that's fantastic, and honestly, that's encouraging about the electorate, that they can make those kind of distinctions, and you know, you tend to think that people are all, you know, lever A or lever B, and it's nice that they can make some of those nuanced differences. Anna Eskamani, by the way, the first Iranian American elected to any public office in Florida, which is kind of an interesting little note. We are almost totally out of time. Delightful conversation, but I know you're big on higher education. Obviously, here in West Florida, we have been just consumed with the takeover of the board by Governor DeSantis' appointees, the, I think, very bad treatment of our current president, who I dearly love, Martha Saunders, for a university that's been doing very well. I don't know how closely you have been following this, and I hate to put you on the spot with only about, like, really 2 minutes or so left in the interview, but thoughts, observations, anything you want to say, having followed, because I know you do follow this because you care about the university system and being a higher ed person yourself, but any thoughts or observations about this or what it means for Florida in general?
That was it's incredibly concerning. You know, any type of politician that inserts themselves into the governance structure of higher education should be a red flag. You know, our universities are not supposed to be political. They're supposed to be focused on building the next generation of talent for our workforce and giving young people leadership skills to better our state and our country. And when we continue to see Governor Ron DeSantis just exert his influence over the process, it really corrodes this experience. And Dr. Saunders, so incredibly qualified. And if you are a merit-based person, right, if you're upset about some of the perceptions that people have been selected, you know, based on identity or based on favoritism, that is what's happening right now. Governor Ron DeSantis is choosing people just based on favoritism towards him, not on merit. And I'm very disappointed knowing the direction things are going right now at UWF, which is why I was proud to co-sponsor legislation with Republican Representative Michelle Salzman,
right,
to restore transparency to the presidential search process, because that is your president. That's not Governor DeSantis' president. And obviously these fights will continue.
I thought that was the most bizarre reversal, like gaslighting, that I've seen the governor
yet.
Is because a bill is so bipartisan that even Michelle Salzman and Anna Eskamani can work together on it, he used that as an argument against the bill. How dare you support anything that Anna Eskamani would ever do? And I'm like, good Lord, sir, you couldn't have been more upside down on understanding the significance of this issue here in Pensacola. So anyway, hey, Anna, we're completely out of
100%.
Time. But thank you. So I hope we'll talk again because, again, I can talk with almost anybody. The people I have the most trouble with, honestly, talking are not people who disagree with me. It's people who don't reason well, aren't open to being persuaded, and who lie. I mean, those are like my keys. I find you, you know, historically, having watched you in the house, you know, very open, very honest. You're always smiling and having fun. There's a little bit of self, joking at your own, you know, expense.
Deprecating humor.
Yeah, which is, you know, always endearing. But hey, keep totally. Up the good work, and I hope we can kind of continue this conversation on other topics at a different time. Anna Eskamani, State
thank
Representative
you.
For District 42, thank you so much for the time and for what you're doing. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Be blessed, everyone. Talk soon.
Absolutely. 5:54 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. If you are thinking about buying or selling a home and you want to ask somebody questions, I mean, like, you haven't made a decision. You're not, like, invested in the process, but you want to ask somebody who knows. Well, give Christina Leavenworth a call. I know she likes that. In fact, she has said specifically on Pep Talk that, you know, even if all you're at is the stage of, I just have a question about how this works, you know, I'm not sure that I understand how this zoning affects me. I mean, you know, I don't know what your question might be. You might be something fairly standard, like, you know, what's the market doing right now? Or is now a good time to buy or sell or to rent? But could be anything. If it's related to real estate, give her a call. Just say, hey, you know, Andrew McKay says you can answer any question about real estate. Here's one. Okay, cool. I mean, you're going through a divorce. How does that work? You're dealing with an estate sale. How does that work? All these things that they deal with, you know, some are a little bit more routine than others, but the point is she's there as a resource for you. Whether you've made a decision, whether you need to hire a realtor or not, just give her a call, 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Hi, this is Terrence A. Gross. Did you know that Florida recently passed a major tort reform package? The legislature reduced Florida's general injury statute of limitations from 4 years to 2 years. They limited attorney's fees and homeowners' lawsuits, which could adversely affect homeowners. For any injury claim, call me, Terrence A. Gross, at 850-434-3333 or visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm telling you, baby, that's not mine.
One time, one world, two times, one love, three times, rewind. Cause I'ma dedicate this song to everyone I gotta shoot it.
Good morning. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, and I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Good morning. A celebration in Liverpool took a tragic turn yesterday when a van crashed into a crowd of soccer fans. At least 50 people were hurt in that incident. That includes a child with serious injuries. The crowd was celebrating Liverpool's Premier League title at the time. Police arrested a 53-year-old man. They say there's no sign of terrorism being involved in that incident.
I mean, there are other possibilities, right? It could be a medical incident.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, yeah. Who knows? Yeah, and I'm in no position to say one way or the other whether that assessment is right. Just, you know, it's always possible.
Absolutely. Well, the former Arkansas police chief still on the run, Andrew. Grant Hardin, once the top cop in the city of Gateway, Arkansas, escaped from the North Central unit in Celico Rock on Sunday. He was serving a 30-year sentence for murder and rape, a statewide manhunt underway in Arkansas. And the Ludwig Institute says the real unemployment rate across the nation could be as high as 24%. That would be way above the official 4.2%. The figure includes not just people out of work, but also people stuck in part-time jobs or earning too little to make ends meet.
Yeah, it's a really interesting take on economic statistics because we have a very low unemployment rate, like 4%, right? But this analysis of the underemployed, and if you try to include them or the functionally unemployed, And so, like you said, the one category is people who are part-timers who want to be full-timers but can't find a full-time job.
Right.
Another would be people who are working full-time but can't afford their bills. You know, is that count as employment? Well, I mean, yeah, they're working, but, you know, for what point? And if you sort of batch all of that in, I actually think you ought to also include, frankly, the people who have left employment. You know, I still think there's a problem in us not tracking the number of people who would otherwise be working except they can't afford childcare or, you know, right? I mean, you know,
absolutely.
So what's like our, what's our real 100% people working in the jobs they want to work in our economy? What does that look like versus how many people are actually doing that? That's really the unemployment number. And we don't have a good metric on that that I know of. It's not something we talk a lot about, but it is certainly much, much more than 4%. And 4% makes us think, oh, everything's fine. Everything is not fine. That's good. So thank you for bringing that up, David. It's a very important subject.